And welcome back to the show. It is officially Fun Friday. With us here in the studio, we've got Richard Norgrove, who is also known as Ricardo or Rich Jr. And there are apparently a lot of Richard Norgroves running around at Bear Republic Brewery up in Healdsburg.
Hello, everybody. It's my first time on the radio, so bear with me. This is kind of neat.
Bear, are we going to have a lot of bear puns today? Is that what's going to be going on here?
Oh, no. We'll see.
I should mention that next Friday, a week from today, is going to be the Battle of the Brews 2006, which is going to be hosted by our sister station, the Fox 101.7, and Jeff Blazy. And that is going to be Friday, March 31st, from 5:30 till 10. At the Sonoma County Fairgrounds Grace Pavilion.
I'll tell you, it is a wonderful party. And it is a party. Blazy throws a big party.
He does.
A little crazy, and I mean, it's for a good cause. That, you know, the 2030 Club does a really good job with a lot of their philanthropic work, and you know, I recommend it. There's probably two or three beer festivals of the year, and this would be one not to miss.
And this is the tickets are $40 in advance. You can pick them up at a number of different places, including let's see, Third Street Ale Works, Bear Republic Brewing, Johnny Garlic's, Traverso's, Wally's Liquor, or Michelle's Italian Restaurant, and all of that money will, all the proceeds will benefit the Sonoma County Children at Risk.
There you go.
So it is all going to a good cause, and it's a good party.
I you know, like I say, I recommend it. The bands are good, and you're going to be able to taste all different types of beers from all over Northern California.
Right, and the focus here is on Northern Cal microbreweries. Is that
yeah? You know what they do is they get a good representation, and you know they've got, I guess, the Wonder Bread Five, which is a really fun band that'll be there. But you know, this is one that the brewers locally will go to. And you know, I don't know if you'll actually see a lot of real specialty beers because the season right now,
right,
for beer brewing is not. You know, there's seasonality to the beer industry, and right now we're kind of at a lull. Everyone's getting ready for summertime production, and so you'll probably see a lot of the staple beers. You wouldn't see like Oktoberfest and stuff like that.
Right. On previous shows, I did talk about the fact that it's really interesting that beer, unlike wine, has a very short turnaround cycle, and so there tend to be interesting seasonal beers. There are winter beers, there are Christmas beers, Oktoberfest that you had mentioned,
yep,
and summer beers.
Yep. And you should look for that. You know, as people progress In their understanding of microbrewed beers, you know, the macros do a tremendous job of putting out their specialty beers throughout the course of the year. But the micros, you know, again, the seasonality, there's a definite spring season to beer producing. The winter beers have a tendency to be a little bit more festive, using specialized ingredients, higher alcohols, things of that nature. And almost every good brewer I know does some sort of a winter seasonal beer and then some sort of a summer specialty beer.
And actually, my favorite season nowadays is fall during the harvest season.
Yep.
Because during the hop harvest, there are a number of brewers now that make fresh hop beers.
Yep, that's a fun new category or style of beer. I'll say that's kind of emerging. And in the last several years, we've actually experimented with it and played with it. And this year, we got to go. I actually personally went to Yakima, chose the hops, had them picked, and they flew home and made it faster than I did. And then we brewed with them less than 48 hours from the vine to the kettle. It was really a cool thing. We called it SS Ale, and it was Simply Simcoe. And Simcoe's a
type of hop.
Yep, it's a really very high alpha acid, very pungent, very strong hop that had a real distinct character. And we were getting ready to actually produce the exact same beer, but with the hops now from the same harvest that have been processed.
Now, normally, hops are normally dried. I mean, this is not usually a fresh green product that you use when you're brewing, isn't it?
Yes, and that's really the complexity to that style of beer is the fact that they are wet. And when they are wet, there's a moisture content. They also haven't gone through the actual analysis that the brewer needs to figure out alpha acids, bittering elements. So you kind of take a wag, I like to call it, in terms of how you brew with it, because you don't know what you're going to get. Every year, it's different. It's what is fresh right from the field. So,
and now the hops. I mean, I think there. Now we all know that. Well, we all know. If you've listened to this show before, you know that there are four primary ingredients to beer. Two of those are pretty common. That is water and yeast.
Yes.
And the other two is grain and hops. And hops is the unique thing because that's what gives beer its bitterness and also quite a bit of the flavor and aroma.
And you certain brewers will give you their focus, their energy in terms of how they choose to brew beer. I'm a brewer that likes to balance the yeast, malt, and hops, and water's kind of one of the ingredients that I get from where I get water from, which mm-hmm. is Northern Sonoma County. But the hops portion of this is a tremendous energy behind hoppier beers in the last several years.
Yes.
And I think a lot of that just has to do with that people are getting more educated with that flavor component of beer, and because of that, you're seeing people experiment with newer hops, and the growers are actually, they're energized by this because they're seeing the brewers looking for some distinctness. So mm-hmm. I might do a beer similar to, say, what Denise is doing at Third Street Ale Works, style-wise or stylistically wise, but we use two different styles of hops, and they're completely different impressions of the same style. It becomes really fascinating.
Well, and to people who are not regular drinkers of craft beer or microbrewed beer around here, many of the Sonoma County brewers in particular, Lagunitas, Bear Republic, Russian River, tend to really focus on the hops. That seems to be a local thing. And hops used to be a major crop right here in Sonoma County.
Oh, you got it. Healdsburg, northern Sonoma County, if you drive around, this is one of the things that I have as a personal goal one day. I want to document the existing hop kilns that are available today. It's still all historically, all around. And, someday someone will write that book. It'll be a really fun book to see done because there is a great history behind it.
And as a matter of fact, anyone who's ever been to Hop Kiln Winery, now you know the origin of that name, that it was actually a kiln used to dry out these hops. Because as we were just saying, they're not used fresh. They're actually dried out like dried flowers. Hops are flowers.
Yeah, it's somewhat interesting, but the hop industry ended up having to change. We moved from hops to prunes and apples, and a lot of that had to do with how the area has changed in terms of logging that happened on the mm-hmm. coastal hills. It changed some of the climates. We started to see irrigation and things changing in terms of the amount of water that's utilized for it. And so the hop crop also, out of necessity, it became cheaper to do it in Oregon and Washington when you could start shipping it down. The local growers couldn't compete with the mass-produced stuff up north.
Well, and not to mention that wine is, or grapes are, a much more profitable hop acre.
Oh, yes.
This is Fun Friday. We do have some fun stuff to give away. We've got tickets today to Harvey Korman and Tim Conway at the Wells Fargo Center for the Arts. That is this coming Thursday at 5 o'clock. We've got another pair of tickets to give away right now to the second set of callers. Just call in and Tiny will give you the information you need to register and pick up your tickets at the show. That is this coming Thursday at 5 p.m. at the Wells Fargo Center. It'll take me a while to get used to saying the Wells Fargo Center. For quite a while, I'm going to want to say the Luther Burbank Center. We are sitting here with Richard Norgrove from the Bear Republic Brewing Company. And Bear Republic is in Healdsburg, right in the middle of Healdsburg Square. And I have to say, I was just there for the first time recently. It is a beautiful location. I mean, downtown Healdsburg is beautiful.
Yeah, we really lucked out with that. As my father and I looked at how we were, or where we were going to try to put this brewery mm-hmm. 12 years ago when we started kind of out of our garage in Santa Rosa, my dad being local from Sonoma, I'm actually fourth generation Sonoma County. My kids are fifth generation.
Mm-hmm.
And he really wanted to do it downtown Sonoma. And we looked around. We looked at Windsor. We looked at Santa Rosa. And Healdsburg just kind of seemed to be the fit. And, Healdsburg 12 years ago, there's a lot of change that's happened.
Oh,
up
Healdsburg's
in that town.
Grown up around you, essentially.
Oh, my goodness. It's I think there's, the number of wine tasting rooms has become phenomenal on our plaza. And, way back when we first started, we're one of the older businesses on the plaza now.
There you go.
Which is amazing.
Speaking of growth, now Bear Republic is in that interesting, awkward teenage years. Your production level at the moment is somewhere in the neighborhood of 6,000 barrels a year, is that
well,
correct?
Well, yeah, that was last year's production. I'm pretty proud to say that we hit the 9,000 barrel mark for 2005.
So you've gone up 50% in 1 year.
Yeah, we actually documented about a 42% growth is what the number we had come up with.
Wow. And as a result, and part of this, if you go into many of the local stores around here, you will see that instead of the large 22-ounce bottles, which are usually called bombers of Bear Republic, there are now some 12-ounce bottles in six-packs of two of your varieties.
Yes, we were kind of forced into that market. We were told by the big purchasers, our big customers, that if we didn't start putting them in 12-ounce bottles pretty soon, that we'd see our bomber spaces dwindle away. And we fearfully looked at that market going, goodness, do we really want to dive into it? And we did, and it's been a wonderful success. And part of it was a learning curve. You know, as a small company wanting to get into that type of a bottle, there's a lot more dynamics and people's impressions of those little 12-ounce bottles out there. It just has blossomed. You know, we, if I could make more, I could sell it.
Well, right. We have a winner on that, so we'll hold off on any more calls for Tim Conway at this point, but we've got a few more tickets to give away later. The 12-ounce bottles, I mean, the problem, of course, now you're plagued by your success, because that was such a successful thing. That it is so popular now that both the Red Rocket Ale and the Racer 5, which are both delicious beers.
Thank you.
Both of those are now available in 6-ounce or 6-packs, 12-ounce bottles. And unfortunately, that means more people want to buy your stuff. How can it be a bad thing?
Well, it becomes a bad thing because there's no brewing schools out there. How do you train a brewer? Where do they start? You know, they have to have some love for their craft. Mm-hmm. And we end up running a brewer through about a year to year and a half training program. And, you know, hate to say it, but the beer industry isn't making the same capital that the wine industry is. And so I spend a year training a brewer, and they get gobbled up by a winery a year later or 2 years, because they can make more money doing that same type of job.
And brewing and winemaking are similar in many ways.
Very similar. The main thing that we do is we brew all year round, where a winery has that one big push of production every year, and what we do in a week in terms of tank pumping, cleaning, that type of stuff, we go through crush all the time. I've been quoted on that a lot, as we're constantly in crush, and any brewer will tell you that they love that intensity and energy.
A previous brewer to you, and we recently had a cider maker on, both describe winemakers as lazy because they only have to do this once a year, whereas you're doing this every day, every week.
Well, some people might call them lazy. I actually think they're pretty smart, you know, and I wish I could get to that point where we could do it once a year. But, you know, this 12-ounce project for us has really actually opened up new people to microbrewed beer. They never had Racer 5 before.
Oh, yes.
And I think that's probably been the biggest benefit to us. And we just needed to do it. It's about time.
So can we talk about Cloverdale? Is that an open secret?
It is, yeah. Bear Republic has just reached its 10-year anniversary, and as the demand for our product has grown, we were looking to the future, my father and I, and it's been about a 2-year project at this point, and we finally broke ground about 2 weeks ago. We have tanks, a brew house sitting up in Cloverdale right now, and the project's moving forward, and we're hoping we'll be producing some beer out of Cloverdale within 6 months, 7 months.
So you'll be able to make even more of these 12-ounce bottles,
yeah,
so that even more people can try Bear Republic beer.
That's the plan. So start looking on the labels, because it'll say Cloverdale, California, really quickly.
Oh, really? So
yeah.
Now you're not moving the entire brewery there, are you?
No, in fact, the part about this I'm most excited about is that we get to have both of them. So, you know, some of the smaller breweries around Vinny and Third Street Ale Works, Brian Hunt, Moonlight Brewing Company, awesome brewers, but they get to do these smaller batches. And I've been, I don't know if you want to call it stymied, but I've been stifled by production beer. People walk in the door and say, Rich, what are you making today? Oh, Racer 5, you know, and it's the same answer over and over and over. And we haven't been able to put out specialty beers. And now we're going to get to do it again.
So now you're going to be doing a lot of the mass production up in Cloverdale.
Yes.
And you can have a little more time to do some experimentation down in Healdsburg.
That's going to be the best part. And so you'll start seeing some really, you know, eclectic bombers coming out, or our bigger 22-ounce bottles here very soon.
And that's, I think the last time we did Brewers of Wine Country, we had Lagunitas on. And they certainly come out with some interesting experiments on a regular basis.
You know, and that's something as a brewer that you want to do, you love to do. And the thing is that as, you know, they had the same growing pains a couple years ago,
yep,
where they were just making IPA and pale ale, and now you see this stuff, brown sugar, and all these really good beers they put out, and I want to be doing the same thing. And And that's what forced us to go into the next level of production, so that we could get back to what our roots originally were.
Right, and certainly one of the things about craft beer in particular seems to be the fact that it is not just production work, that you can actually kind of learn more about the beer, experiment with a recipe. It's a lot like a restaurant in that way.
You know, that and the ingredients also lend to that type of creativity, because they are changing. You know, mm-hmm. we don't get just one set of grapes that come in, and that's what we utilize as our crop for the year. I fortunately get to actually hand pick my hops and select my hops this, you know, for each beer, and I've done that. It's the first time in 10 years that our company's reached a production level that we could do it.
So. Great. Well, we're going to take a quick break for news, traffic, and weather. And when we come back, I think we're going to be cracking open some bottles, have
All
a little
right.
in-house tasting here.
It's Friday.
You're listening to the Brewers of Wine Country, George Bright, here on News Talk 1350 KSRO.
David Glass, today from 3 to 6. Right now, you're listening to the Pat Thurston Show, live and local on News Talk 1350 KSRO.
And welcome back to the show. George Bright sitting in for Pat Thurston. This is the last day. She's been off all week on vacation. We'll be back all rested and tan next week to just get right back into it, I'm sure. We've still got a couple of tickets left to give away for... we've got two pairs of tickets. We'll give both pairs away right now, why don't we? For Tim Conway and Harvey Korman at the Luther Burbank... Oh, see, I knew I'd do it. At the Wells Fargo Center for the Arts. That was not on purpose. The next two callers will get tickets next Thursday, 5 p.m. Tim Conway and Harvey Korman at the Wells Fargo Center for the Arts. Tiny will give you information on how to pick up your tickets. The number, if we hadn't given it out, 636-1350. Now, I'm sitting here with Richard Norgrove from Bear Republic Brewery in Healdsburg. And I do want to give another plug to, we're going next Friday, the Battle of the Brews. 1 week from today, our sister station, the Fox 101.7, Jeff Blasey, will be co-hosting the Battle of the Brews, which is going to feature nearly all of the Northern California microbrewers. And all of the proceeds are going to go to the Sonoma County Children at Risk. This is going to be at the Sonoma County Fairgrounds, the Grace Pavilion, next Friday from 5:30 till 10, though they stop serving beer at 8. There's also going to be fine food there, and Bear Republic will be there, correct?
Oh, it's going to be a great party, like we said earlier. Come and enjoy the music and just have a good time. It's a great festival.
Now, on to the fun part of this show, as always, which is the beer tasting. You brought a couple of Bear Republic beers with you. Now, nearly all of your beer is available in bottles, isn't it?
At this point, yes. We have, well, yes. We sell, at this point, a total of 7 different brands in package.
Mm-hmm.
But, just like any other good small micro, you come to the pub, and there's always one or two eclectic beers that are just for the pub only.
Right.
And, you know, we've do that every, try to have one a month that something's different that you won't find in a bottle, just to give the locals something that's special that they can say is theirs.
So, and during the ad break, we were talking about your red wheat, which is not available in bottles in the stores.
Yeah, as we were saying earlier, it's our 10-year anniversary, and one of the things we've done for, in celebration of that, is every month we've been releasing a beer that we did from our very first year. And one of the beers that we did was red wheat, and this one actually developed red wheat developed into Red Rocket at some point. I mean, this was the lighter version of Red Rocket.
Now, when we talk about the four main ingredients in beer, which are water, yeast, malt, and hops, wheat is not a normal ingredient for most beers, is it?
It's not unless you're a Germanic brewer and you're making a Weitz beer or something like that. That would be, you know, one of your main ingredients. But we utilized wheat beer, and the way I actually started using wheat was Byron Birch at the Beverage People when I took my very
mm-hmm.
first homebrew class
mm-hmm.
in an effort for him, for me to try to get better bubbles, have a beer that had a beautiful head on it in the glass. He always recommended using a little bit of wheat malt, and that was something that I've carried through on a lot of the beers.
And so what characteristic does wheat bring to a beer?
Well, wheat will actually produce a certain level of fullness and mm-hmm. roundness to the beer in terms of its flavor character because of the sugar, the type of sugars, and a lot of the yeast strains out there have a hard time breaking down that sugar molecule just because it's a little more complex than a regular two-row sugar molecule. And that lends to more full mouth feel.
So the biology of beer, obviously, the yeast eats the malt.
Yes.
And produces alcohol and carbon dioxide.
Yep.
Which are two of the fun things in beer, the alcohol and the bubbles.
Yes.
And so it is harder for that yeast to eat the sugars that come from wheat. And so therefore it could kind of leave some of the sugar still in the beer.
Yep, it leaves its own little essence, its little flavor kiss on a beer. It's there, you know, and that's what I like about it. And then it also has a really wonderful term that we call head retention. It allows you to have these really fine bubbles all the way through the glass.
Wow.
So.
All right, so now you've poured out a beer for us. Which is this?
We brought we brought today a beer that came fresh off the line today, Racer 5. This is our India Pale Ale. It's one of our signature beers. It's a stronger IPA style of beer. And
mm-hmm.
and we were discussing this about this being a bottle-conditioned beer. One of the things you'll notice, George, on this is that today's batch, because it was just brewed, doesn't have as much of the carbonation level.
Now, there isn't much of a head on this.
And that's because the beer will do its final bit of carbonating within the bottle, which then gives it the classification as bottle conditioned. It's actually will finish its ferment within this bottle.
So there's actually live yeast inside that bottle.
Yep.
When it comes off the factory line.
You got it. One of the things that I really strive to do is we don't have a filter. You could walk around our brewery and we don't have a filter. We produce natural beers. And to show that we're really, you know, we're committed to this particular process, which
mm-hmm.
is actually, you know, can be frowned upon by some people. We date code our beers. In fact, we're one of the small breweries that actually, if you look at the side of our labels, has its own little identification number on it, and it's us, the brewers, so we can manage our quality control. That's what we do.
So we actually can tell, if this beer is old beer, because beer actually does go bad after a while, doesn't
it? Yes, it does.
Or it changes characteristic is
yep.
a better way to put it.
Better way to put it. And some of the larger guys, you know, they have this thing where they'll flash pasteurize the beer and they actually kill everything in it, and then it gets a date that it was born or something on there.
Right.
And in some respects, it's actually the day the beer died, because everything was killed and it became inert.
That's right. If you pasteurize the beer, obviously there's no more live yeast in there.
You got it. And in this case, this is a live beer. So, you know, just as the style indicates, India Pale Ale, you know, this particular style of beer, its origins,
mm-hmm.
you know, if now we get into a style type of where this particular beer was produced for the English, for their troops in India,
mm-hmm.
and it had to make it all the way around.
Hence the name India Pale Ale.
And what kept this beer strong and flavorful was the fact that it was such high in alcohol, high in sugar content, and by the time it made it to India, they could actually, the troops there got used to drinking this higher test beer, and that's what this style has actually evolved into one of the best selling styles in the U.S.
So this an IPA by style generally has a bit more alcohol than a standard beer, and is also quite a bit hoppier because that's a preservative, correct?
Yes, those are all part of that particular flavor characteristic and style of beer. You know, and that's, we were discussing about naturally carbonated beers,
mm-hmm.
beers that actually are bottle conditioned.
Mm-hmm.
This particular beer, we've done this. We've saved it for 6, 9 months, a year, year and a half, and it gets more complex. And what's a testament to all brewers who produce India Pale Ales is their QC, their quality control programs,
mm-hmm.
that allow the beer to actually age and change its characteristic. And you're starting to see more and more people cellar beers.
Oh,
just,
yes.
Just look at what Russian River has done with their Belgian beers. It's stylistically the same type of mindset, from that you can take a beer, put it in your cellar, hold on to it for 6, 9 months, and it gains a certain richness because of the fact that it's bottle conditioned.
Right. Well, and the fact that the hops will mellow with age, the flavors tend to get a bit more complex and blend well.
You got it.
Now, since this beer just came off the assembly line today, this is actually going to be a little sweeter and a little bit less carbonated,
yes.
than if I were to buy this in a store and it spent a month in a truck in a warehouse in the back of it. So, and most people, I'm assuming, are going to buy a beer that's close to a month old.
Probably. By the time it leaves our factory,
mm-hmm.
it usually stays with us for about a week to 2 weeks. We require that our beer stay with us for a week. And then it goes to the distributor, stays there for 1 or 2 weeks. But, you know, most people in Sonoma County are getting beers that are 3 or 4 weeks old out of the bottle.
Well,
because
we're so close to the brewery, it's going to be very fresh beer.
And I see that when our beer travels farther. We're selling beer in 22 states now.
Wow.
And, you know, I'll get an email from a customer in New York that'll say, God, we love this. And they'll talk about the beer being dry and have this real crispness to us. Well, you know, fortunately or unfortunately, however you'd like to look at it, because the locals are getting it so fresh, it never really gets to age. I prefer Racer 5 at 2 months old. I think that's when it's at its best.
Now, the last time I was at the brewery, I had some cask-conditioned Racer 5. And what is cask-conditioning?
Well, one of the things that I have always... breweries get classified. We're more of an Anglo-style brewery, so we follow English brewing traditions.
Mm-hmm.
What it is it's more about the presentation of the beer. Just as this beer is bottle conditioned,
mm-hmm.
a cask is a serving vessel that the English originally developed based on their distribution type of networks, and the pubs themselves the beer would go through a natural carbonation state and then be served basically by gravity through a hand pump, and that's what we do at Bear Republic.
So we're not talking about a pressurized keg at all.
Nope, there's no forced carbonation in this beer. Everything is drawn off of it. Now, the downside to cask conditioned beer, and one of the reasons it's never taken off in America, is that if you're doing it correctly, you actually introduce oxygen onto the beer, which is the biggest no-no in anything that you would do. And so it really, the stability is 3 or 4 days. So to ask a pub owner,
mm-hmm.
downtown Santa Rosa, to put a beer on, a keg of it, that's only going to be good for 3 days, just wouldn't work in America. They're looking for something that can stay there for a week to 2 weeks in any given time.
Right, so unless you know it's something that's going to move very quickly, it's not going to be a good idea to have it be cask-conditioned.
You got it. So the people in the know, the beer lovers, if they see a cask-conditioned beer and they know about it, they usually go for it.
When I was there, that was the thing I went for. I looked up at the board and I see, okay, you've got Racer 5 and Red Rocket and Hop Rod Rye. I can buy all of those in the store. Cask conditioned, I want to try some of that.
And the fun part about it is you could take that exact same beer from the same batch, the same
mm-hmm.
tank, cask conditioned, and then something that we serve out of a regular Sankey keg, and they're two completely different tasting beers, even though they were from the same batch, and it's all about presentation.
And it actually adds some conditioning to the beer.
Yes, it does.
So let's talk about some of the other styles that you have. I know that we've got some Red Rocket to taste later.
Yes.
But you also have a number of other styles, and almost all the beers that you come out with are hoppy. And one of my favorite beers, not just from Bear Republic, but anywhere, is the Hop Rod Rye.
Yep.
Now, again, rye is not normally a grain that you find in beer.
That's true, and one of the things that I've always tried to strive at our brewery is that I have wonderful assistants who work for me for a long period of time, and each brewer has the opportunity to put his signature out there.
Mm.
And this was a brewer who worked for me for many years. His name was Joel Johnson, and he's the one who actually originally created this beer. He loved rye whiskey.
Mm.
That was his thing.
Yes.
Wild Turkey Rye.
Yes.
And we wanted to somehow incorporate that dryness and the character of rye into the beer, and this was his baby. This is what it came from.
Oh, I've always thought of this as a cross between a very good IPA and a loaf of rye bread. I mean, I've had a number of rye beers in my day, and this rye in particular has a very, very distinct rye taste to it, which I think really adds to the beer.
It just lends to some of that complexity, and yes, it is very hoppy, and it is very bitter, and it has a high test to it, but
mm-hmm.
There is this residual sweetness that comes out at the end, and it's the rye. It's something you can't put your finger on, and when you're finally all done with it, you read the ingredients list, there it is.
Oh, it's rye malt. It's right in the name,
yes,
so it's
it
pretty
is.
Obvious.
Yep.
Now, the XP Pale Ale is probably the beginner's craft brew.
Yes, and just like, every micro around here has their own pale ale, and I always tell people this beer lives in the shadows of the Sierra Nevada, and it's true. This is our basic interpretation of that style, and it's an entry level into the styles of beers that we make. The dilemma that I've always had as a brewer, and I know that Vinny suffers from this, and Denise at Third Street did also,
mm-hmm.
and especially Brian Hunt, is where do you classify some of these beers? Red Rocket, it doesn't fit into its own class. It's its own style of beer. Hop
yes.
Rod Rye, there's no classification that this beer would sit into, say, a classical beer judge would say, what is it?
Mm-hmm.
The Red Wheat, another example. There's no category for a Red Wheat beer. Big Bear Black, which is our really dark, chocolatey stout that we make, it doesn't fit into a category. So that's been the biggest problem with us is people say, wow, where does this beer fit? What type of beer is it? Well, I have to tell them, it's its own beer.
That's right. You don't necessarily have to pigeonhole a beer. And
yep.
that was actually a problem I had with the beer we're going to try after the commercial break, which is the Red Rocket. The first time I had it, I was expecting an amber ale. I love amber ales.
Yep.
And I had a sip of that and went, this is in no way an amber ale. Doesn't mean it's not a good beer. It's just not the amber ale I was expecting.
And that's the thing is that people, amber ales were very popular when this beer first came out.
Mm-hmm.
And the name Red was... really promoted by some of the bigger breweries, and they were all amber style beers. And then you actually make what now is considered a strong American red ale. It actually, after years of working, this has its own category classification.
Right. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, more with Richard Norgrove from Bear Republic Brewing, and we're going to taste the Red Rocket Ale up next and talk about more of their brews. You're listening to George Bright here on News Talk 1350 KSRO.
Sonoma County's news station, News Talk 1350, KSRO.
And welcome back to the show. We've been beer geeking during the commercial break. This is George Bright sitting here with Richard Norgrove from Bear Republic Brewery. And we are talking about all the various styles of beers that they make. Now, one interesting beer that you make, which I think is one of the best examples of the style, is the Big Bear Black Stout. Which I often have problems saying. There's just a few too many B's in there.
Yes, exactly.
But it is now, I mean, there is a category of stouts called Imperial Stouts or Double Stouts,
yep.
and this is probably in that same range, isn't it?
It fits in this genre of what's called a foreign style stout or a Russian Imperial Stout. And believe it or not, it doesn't have as much alcohol as a Russian Imperial Stout, and we experimented trying to make it fit into that category, and I just couldn't get the balance right. So that was why the name was Big Bear Black. It's our black ale. When people say, did you make a stout? It doesn't really fit into a stout or a porter.
Right.
So we just call it a black ale.
Right. And I mean, Russian Imperial stouts can be up to 10% alcohol,
yes,
which is easily double what you'd find in a normal beer.
Exactly. But the thing is that, you know, if you think about where that style developed, again, another one of those historical type of styles, it came from an area where it was very cold. Normally they'd be drinking vodka, and this was a beer that they came up with so that they could enjoy those long winters, and it's something that they could sip on.
Well, and those Imperial Stouts were also import stouts, weren't they? They
yes,
were actually
they were.
Brewed in the U.K.
Yep.
to be shipped to Russia, which meant that they had to be tough enough to withstand the voyage.
Thus, the other category, which is, you know, foreign-style stout, because it basically it's indicative of something that was shipped or from Europe.
Wow, and Big Bear has one of the best mouthfeels I've ever seen in a stout. I mean, it is very smooth and almost creamy in nature.
There's a lot of residual sugar in that beer. We use everything from this special Louisiana brown molasses that I have flown in.
Mm-hmm.
We use C&H brown sugar in it, golden brown sugar, which leaves a really nice mouthfeel, which contributes to that softness. And then also we use a lot of malted white wheat. We get back to this white wheat that Byron tuned me in 2 years ago
so
as a home brewer.
There's actually wheat in this stout.
Yes,
I know
is.
It's common to put oatmeal in stout.
Yes, and some people used to, well, they've used all different types of things to create the sweeteners in the stouts. Some people use chocolates. Some people use coffees. It just depends on what the brewer is going for. And in this case, we were trying to, again, balance the sugars from the molasses and the brown sugar with this wheat malt.
If you haven't yet tried this, the Big Bear Black Stout, it's available in most of the stores around here, is really a big surprise. It is very sweet, very creamy, and a very, very tasty beer. Now, what have you poured out for us here?
Well, this was what started Bear Republic. It's a beer that we call Red Rocket, and it was a culmination of many years of me as a home brewer trying to nail a beer that I could say would be just my own, something that had its own, didn't fit into a category, couldn't be pigeonholed into a category. This beer has actually won us 2 silver medals and some golds at the state level, but the silver medals at the Great American Beer Festival, and I had to put it in another unclassified category called Other Strong Ale.
Because this is not an amber ale.
It's not. What it is, it's a blend of a Scottish-style wee heavy with an IPA style of beer. So there's a tremendous amount of sweetness in this beer, but then it's also got a little kick that comes from the hops. So you can definitely smell it in the nose, but it ends up finishing sweet.
And now, what is a wee heavy? I mean, what would make a beer a wee heavy? That's
well,
a Scottish style, correct?
A Scottish style of beer that actually originated from their part of Scotland. And when I say that is that the English has had a lot of history where they dominated Scotland. And this was a particular beer that if you were of wealth and stature, you could actually get it in its pure form. If not, it unfortunately was blended with the Midlands beer from England because the tax man wanted it to be done that way. So a wee heavy, or something that would be classified as a shilling 90 or shilling 120, which was actually indicative of a tax code.
Oh.
And it had to do with how much sugar and alcohol content were in the beer. So if you had a Schilling 90, a Schilling 120 was that much stronger and that much more robust.
And that much more tax.
Yes, it was. So this is a blending of a Schilling 90 and a traditional IPA. So it has the hop profile of an India Pale Ale, but the malt characteristic of a Scottish ale.
Yeah, I'd say except for the Big Bear Black Stout, nearly all of the beers that I've had from Bear Republic tend to be the hops are one of the main players in the flavor. The Hop Rod Rye, the Racer 5, Racer X, as you call it. I always call it Racer 10.
Well, that's fine. It was originally that beer. We were asked to produce that beer as a double IPA. So, mm-hmm. You know, what's twice a five? So we came up with Racer 5, Racer X. And that particular beer, you know, has really taken off. And it is a double IPA. It ends up being classified as one of the smaller double IPAs out there. But very good in its own right.
Let's see, we've got about a minute left. I know that one of the other things I always like about brewers is that they make tribute ales, that they actually can use their beer to promote something that they think is important to them, and Bear Republic has their own tribute ale.
Yes. Peter Brown is a very, very wonderful man, and a lot of people in the beer industry in Northern California know of Peter Brown, and he's also been inducted into the Softball Hall of Fame. He used to play on the Guanella Brothers softball team, a very famous team from Sonoma County,
mm-hmm.
And he was my salesman. He was basically my sales director, and he passed away suddenly of a heart attack, and as a basically saying thanks for all the energy that he put into creating our brands, we put out this beer called Tribute Ale, And
it's a brown ale.
It's a brown ale.
Which is only appropriate considering Pete's name is Pete Brown.
Pete Brown, yeah. You know, one of the things that was quite ironic about this beer is we received a letter from another brewery that uses the name Pete's, and they threatened to sue us. And I thought, oh my goodness, this is... Pete has always had some controversy around him somewhere whenever mm-hmm. he went. He always knew when he was in the room. And I thought, you know, he's just getting back at me. And after people recognized this beer and what it was, they said, you know, they dropped it.
Wonderful story. Richard Norgrove, the head brewer from Bear Republic Brewery. You'll be able to find their beer and many others at the Battle of the Brews, which is coming up next Friday at the Sonoma County Fairgrounds Grace Pavilion, 5:30 to 8 p.m., sponsored by Jeff Blasey and our own sister station, The Fox 101.7. You've been listening to George Bright here on News Talk 1350 KSRO.